Hello, and welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Crystal. We're librarians at Nashville Public Library.
This podcast is where you can find reviews and recommendations of the best books, movies, and music available for checkout from the Popular Materials Department of the Nashville Public Library.
You can also learn about library programs such as concerts, film screenings, book clubs, author talks, and book signings.
Forgive the June bug in my throat. We're going to change things up a bit this month. Amanda joins the music team with an appreciation of the hive mind that is Five Browns. I tell you about a record that is bizarre even by Frank Zappa standards. Then Jeremy will show us that even punks write books, too. Movie hound Bill reveals the pleasure of death at a funeral.
I can't believe you listened to that.
Hey guys, this is Amanda. For those of you who don't know this about me, I'm a classically trained piano player. And I thought, since I get to visit Musicland here in the Popmatic podcast, that I'd share a favorite artist with you. The Five Browns are a group of brothers and sisters who play together as an ensemble of pianists. They studied together at Juilliard, which is the first time that five siblings have ever attended the same music program at the same time. The Browns, Deandra, Desiree, Gregory, Melody, and Ryan arrange their own music. I especially enjoy their self-titled debut CD that has a spunky medley of West Side Story tunes. Take a listen, and then you're going to tell me what that song was. Did you figure it out? The finger snaps didn't give it away? Well, that was from the song Cool, right before they start to rumble. The thing I like about the Five Browns is that each Brown plays his or her own piano. Think about it. Five pianos. It's 10 hands, 50 fingers, or 440 piano keys, or, well, okay, you get the idea. There's just a lot of room to have fun and make some noise. If you like popular classical tunes and are looking for new arrangements, I'd recommend that you check these folks out. Here's a final sample from Grieg's In the Hall of the Mountain King to Wet Your Whistle. So, Brian, tell us about the other Frank.
Folks are often surprised to learn I am not a Frank Zappa fan. His lyrics are just too mean-spirited for me to jive with his vision. You might be thinking, Zappa had many albums that were purely instrumental. Exactly. And one of my favorites is Jazz from Hell. For this album, Zappa took a set of his favorite, notoriously complex compositions and programmed them all into a synclavier synthesizer. The results are fascinating. That's the track Spot Tornado. Hearing Zappa's work like this, I can make more sense of it. I can hear all of his arpeggios and inverted variations more clearly. Zappa's goofiness is not in short supply either. With verbal jabs off the table, he's left with musical ones. Every gesture to the Continental Academy is leveled by an equal nod to schmaltzy elevator music or tasteless jazz funk. Don't worry if you're an old-school Zappa fan. The track Saint Etienne is a live instrumental showcasing some serious guitar wankery between Frank and his then-protege Steve Vai. It's as if Zappa included that track to say, look, real humans can play my music. Zappa spent his career not just blurring the lines between genres, but exploding them. It seems appropriate that his half-silly, half-brainiac synthesized monster prefigures much of the pop sensibility of today's psychedelic electronica. Of course, Frank would probably hate that music. But hey, if he can appropriate everyone else's music for his own ends, why can't we appropriate his?
I can't believe you read that.
This is Brian, and I'm sorry to say that there'll only be one book review this month because our other book reviewer is fulfilling a civic duty. But that's okay. The book that Jeremy is going to review is so cool that it more than makes up for there only being one reviewer.
I used to see Joe Mino's name in music magazines, where his books were advertised next to records I'd never buy, despite the ad copy insisting I should. Mino was marketed as some kind of rock and roll author whose book screamed, "If you like to rock, then you'll love this." Well, I do like to rock, at least in moderation. But when I tried reading Mino's novel Hairstyles of the Damned, it was like reading an inventory of the author's record collection, rather than an engaging narrative. I gave up after only a couple chapters. I don't read music magazines much anymore, but I still see Joe Mino's books, and they're not collections of stories based on Ramones lyrics or alternate histories in which John Lennon lived long enough to jam with Kurt Cobain and save the world from Nickelback. At least this new collection of short stories, Demons in the Spring, isn't. I'm glad I decided to give Mino another chance. Most of these stories begin with simple declarations of extraordinary ideas. Apples are kissing other apples. The zookeeper's heart is broke. People are becoming clouds nowadays. Sometimes these opening lines feel like Mino is giving us a peek behind the curtain at the mechanics of his writing, and the stories feel more like exercises and extrapolation. Other times, as in The Sound Before the End of the World, the result of that extrapolation is funny, surprising, and even touching. The story begins, "Being decent is the only thing that matters in a terrible world like this." That decency is embodied by Ron, a card-carrying, makeup-wearing member of the KISS Army. He also happens to be a cop. Here, Mino's music references work because they say something about the character, namely that Ron is willing to go to great lengths for something he cares about. He's learned to express that dedication to KISS, but not to his family. It's not until drummer Peter Criss quits the band, and a black hole threatens to swallow the town, that Ron realizes how much he cares for his family. In many of Mino's stories, black holes appear in suburbia, children turn into firecrackers, and miniature elephants comfort lonely old men. These forays into the absurd are fun to read, but their tone is often precious or cute. The best stories here are the ones about people facing absurd situations, not the situations themselves. Now Brian has some cool news of his own.
On Wednesday, June 3rd at 6:30, the library is hosting an evening of poetry with Joan Gelfand and Blas Falconer. These two published poets will read from their work in the author's corner at the main library, followed by refreshments and discussion. Miss Gelfand, in town from San Francisco, is the president of the Women's National Book Association, and Mr. Falconer teaches writing at Austin Peay State University here in Nashville. Books will be available for purchase and signing. I hope to see you there.
I can't believe you watched that.
The critics have raved about the movie I'm going to review. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone says it's total fun. Peter Hammond of Maxim raves a fast, furious, and riotously funny farce. And Richard Schickel of Time magazine, no less, says it's insanely funny. Well, I didn't want to be left out on the act, so William Chamberlain of the Popmatic podcast raves it's the feel-good movie of the year. So you're wondering what the title of the movie is. It's called Death at a Funeral. When one hears a title called Death at a Funeral, one doesn't necessarily think Laugh Riot. This British farce, released in 2007, written by Dean Craig and directed by Frank Oz, who has directed other comedies such as Bowfinger, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and Little Shop of Horror, to name a few, and for all of those good people not in the know, Frank Oz is also a puppeteer, and he is responsible for the characters of Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear, and Sam the Eagle, among many others. But I digress, back to the movie. I feel why the movie Death at a Funeral works so well is the casting. There are no major stars, but the actors, Matthew McFadden, Keeley Hawes, Daisy Donovan, and Peter Dinklage, to name a few, are so well cast in their part, that's what gives Death at a Funeral its special appeal. Instead of hiring comedians to do shtick, Frank Oz hired actors who, in turn, created smart, funny characters who we can all relate to. I really haven't gone into what the movie is about. I want you to see this movie knowing it's just extremely funny and touching. Matthew Arnold once wrote, "Spare me the whispering, crowded room, the friends who come and gape and go, the ceremony's air of gloom, all which makes death a hideous show." Well, all I can say is Matthew Arnold never saw Death at a Funeral.
You've been listening to Nashville Public Library's Pop-Matic podcast. For more information, please visit www.library.nashville.org.
That's on the interwebs.